sore throat and hoarseness, but thank God somebody invented microphones, so we'll be able to get over this. And hopefully by Motzei Shabbat I will be fine, because Motzei Shabbat I'm actually doing a program in English, which I don't know if I'm authorized or not to invite everybody, but why not?
We won't tell anyone.
Right. The our tenants at Ol Nechama, that's the Minyan Shir Chadash, Rabbi Ian Pear, very lovely Minyan of Anglos. So they also have an annex in Emek Rephaim number 47, across the street from a very, very important location called Cafe Bagel. It's an extremely important location. So I did something 3 years ago in Ol Nechama for the Hebrew-speaking crowd, and that was an evening of Asara B'Teveit. And normally you'd say, all right, Asara B'Teveit, the fast is a daytime fast. It's a daytime fast, but the fast day starts in the evening. There's a heter achila, permissibility to eat throughout the night. But that doesn't mean the fast day starts in the morning. Nothing starts in the morning. Vayerev, vayvoker, yom echad. Which means that those things that we would deem inappropriate for Asara B'Teveit, a concert, entertainment, partying. I mean, my gosh, it's a fast day for the Churban, for the destruction of Beit HaMikdash. And here in Eretz Yisrael, they tacked on a Shoah component known as Yom HaKadosh HaKlali, that those people who sustain losses and don't know Yahrzeit dates will all say Kaddish together on Asara B'Teveit. In Chutz La'aretz, I remember many people picked Tisha B'Av or Yom Kippur for that purpose, because they were not under any jurisdiction of the chief rabbinate. But the chief rabbinate, the Rabbanut Rashid, even before the establishment of the state, I think it was 1947 already, they established Yom HaKadosh HaKlali on Asara B'Teveit. So it's a day of Avelut, no doubt. And that spirit of Avelut that you have for the day of Asara B'Teveit is appropriate for the evening as well, even though you're permitted to eat. But permitted to eat doesn't mean you should party. There's a very big difference. And the same is true for the night of Shivasa B'Tammuz and Tzom Gedalia. Not necessarily for Tanit Esther, because Tanit Esther is not a day of Evil. It's not a day of mourning. It's just remembering the fast of Esther from the Megillah. So that's a different category. Tisha B'Av, the fast begins at night anyway. So for all practical purposes, we're talking about Shivasa B'Tammuz, Tzom Gedalia, and Asara B'Teveit. To be fair, one of the Rishonim, his name was Rabbi Zrachia Halevi, 12th century, South France, Provence, known popularly by his sefer that he wrote, critical comments against Rabbi Yitzchak Alfasi, the Rif. His sefer was known as HaMa'or, and he's known as the Baal HaMa'or, the author of the Ma'or, Rabbi Zrachia Halevi. He was of the opinion, contrary to what I just said now, that the fast day begins in the morning, and everything you want to know about the fast day begins in the morning. At nighttime, it's business as usual. But he's a single opinion, we call it, Dat Yachid. Most of the other opinions take the lead of the Ramban, and he becomes the majority of the opinion. And as I just explained, the day of the fast begins at night, even though there's heter achila, permissibility to eat, until the morning. And our Rebbe the Rav subscribed to that view, and he said that he brought a few proofs to it. Number one, of all things, he whips out of left field a big surprise. He says, in the Yemenite liturgy, in the minag of the Temanim, so we Ashkenazim will only say Aneinu Hashem Aneinu in the mincha of a Tanit Zibur. The Chazim will already say it in Shacharit and in mincha. The reason why we only say it for mincha is because if you say it by Shacharit, who knows, maybe you might slip, maybe you might have to break your fast. So retroactively, it wasn't a Yom Tzom for you. But the figuring is that mincha time on a fast day usually daven towards the end. And if you made it already to 4 o'clock in the afternoon, you're going to make it till 10 after 5. So that's why everybody says Aneinu for mincha. But we don't say it in our silent Shmoneh Esrei in the morning. Chazan is not saying Aneinu for himself, he's saying it for Am Yisrael. Am Yisrael is certainly fasting. That whatever that collective title is, Am Yisrael. So that's why the Chazan can say it by Shacharit as well, irrespective of what he's going to do at the end of the day. The Yemenites have a minag that they say Aneinu in the silent Shmoneh Esrei, all three davenings, not just Mincha, and not just Shacharit, but also Ma'ariv the night before. Now they also know that Ma'ariv the night before, they can go home and eat supper. So what are they saying? Aneinu Hashem, Aneinu, B'yom Tzom Ta'aniteinu. Because the Yom is a Yom Tzom. The day is a fast day. There's Heter Achila till the morning. And to prove that, there's a very interesting halacha. But let's assume you go to sleep at 10 o'clock at night, and you want to get up early to eat breakfast. You're allowed to do that. When can you eat breakfast? Before Amud HaShachar. So if I'm not mistaken, it depends what calendar you look at, but I think the earliest Zman is going to be 5:08, this coming Sunday morning. So you get up 4:30 in the morning, you want a bowl of cereal with a coffee, that's perfectly legitimate. When are you allowed to do that? If when you went to sleep, Matzah Shabbos, you had in mind that you plan to get up at 4:30 in the morning. You don't have to articulate it. All you have to do is set the alarm clock for 4:30. That means you've intended to get up. But let's assume you went to sleep at 10 o'clock at night, Matzah Shabbos, and you didn't give it a moment's thought about getting up early. And you figured, all right, tomorrow's a fast day, I had a little snack at 9 o'clock, and then Shalom HaYisrael. Tomorrow's a fast day. And then, as many people over the age of 50 know, they got up anyway at 4 o'clock for a variety of other matters. So, it's only 4 o'clock. Let's sit down and have a bowl of, cornflakes. No, your fast has begun already. What do you mean the fast has begun? It says in the calendar 5:08. No. 5:08 is the Zman that everybody starts. But everybody starts when they go to sleep, unless otherwise indicated. Unless you make a Tanai, a condition, that if you wake up before 5:08 this coming Sunday morning, you still want to eat, you didn't make that condition, then at midnight you already began your fast. 11 p.m. you started your fast, when you go to sleep. You don't have that for any other thing in the calendar. You can't say, okay, my Shabbat starts at 2 a.m., my Shabbat starts at 3 a.m. Everybody's Shabbat starts with sundown Friday night. That's the way it works. So what kind of business is this that a fast day, his starts at 5:08, and his starts at 4:08, and his at 3:08? The answer is the fast barely began. But there's a special heter, permissibility, to eat until the break of dawn. That's what it means. So there, the Rav proves that the night of Asara B'Teveit, just as the night of Shavasa B'Tamuz, is an integral part of the fast day in terms of the other things that we're supposed to do. And many times we speak about a fast day and I ask people to define a fast day, so they start illustrating. They start saying, well, we don't eat and drink. Not eating and drinking is a detail. It's a detail of what we don't do on a fast day. But that's not the definition. The Rambam defines the fast day as a day of contemplation, of tefillah, upgraded tefillah, a day of tzedakah, a day of cheshbon and nefesh, to think it out. So that goes on at night as well. This came up in a tshuva from Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Moshe Feinstein was once asked about a permissibility of having a wedding on Motzei Shabbat of Shavasa B'Tamuz. Now Shavasa B'Tamuz, you can come out on Sunday. Usually if it does, it's because it's really on Shabbat that it's pushed to Sunday. But occasionally it comes out on Sunday when Erev Pesach comes out on Shabbat. I think in the year 2021, that's the next opportunity we're going to have, of when Erev Pesach comes out on Shabbat. And here in Yerushalayim we're going to have the Purim Mishulash, the triangular Purim. And that year, Tisha B'Av will come out on Sunday as well, because there's a correlation in the calendar. Whenever the first night of the Seder is, that's the night of Tisha B'Av, the week. So if Motzei Shabbos is the Seder, so Motzei Shabbat is Eicha that year. And if Tisha B'Av is Sunday, Shavuos B'Tamuz is exactly 3 weeks before, is also on Sunday. So the question was, when do the 3 weeks begin? The 3 weeks begin the night of Shavuos B'Tamuz, or do the 3 weeks begin when you start fasting in the morning? And that depended on the machloket between Rav Zrachya HaLevi, the Bala Ma'or, and the Ramban, and most of the others. And Rav Moshe Feinstein took a stand because of particular circumstance that it was important. There was a more than just a convenience issue to allow that family, that couple, to get married on that Matzah Shabbos. And the Rav publicly disassociated himself from that psak, putting it mildly, and he said that Shavuos B'Tamuz began already Matzah Shabbos, and the 3 weeks began already Matzah Shabbos, even though there's Heter Achila, you're allowed to eat until the morning. So certainly you can't have a wedding that Matzah Shabbos. because it's already the 3 weeks. So that's where it comes up. But it's the same thing for Asara B'Tevet. And I say this because 3 years ago I suggested, and it raised some eyebrows in my shul, that I would do a program on the night of Asara B'Tevet with a guitar. Now, 1 second. I'm not planning to give a concert. That's a moment of entertainment. But as Rav Shlomo Kalbach, Zichron LeBracha, said once in a taped interview at the end of his life, he says, you know what's missing from Levayis? Singing. And the truth is, Shlomo was brought to Kever with 5,000 people singing. Hanasham alach v'aguf pa'alach gam ki eilech b'geit salmavet lo yira ra ki ata imadi u'macha Hashem Elokim dim'a me'al kol panim. Music is not, you know, gaiety and simcha. Music is the language of the nefesh. So when the nefesh is happy, it can express itself with happy music, dance music, and so on. When the nefesh is saddened and in deep mourning, the nefesh can also sing. And there's what to sing. And the only thing that was missing from Shlomo's Levaya was that he would have composed a new niggun for the occasion. Except that he didn't realize he was going to go at age 69. Therefore, the program that I put on 3 years ago for the Hebrew speakers at Ol Nechama, I'm basically repeating for Shir Chadash this coming Motzei Shabbat at the Shir Chadash Emek Annex on Rehov Emek Rufayim 47 at 8 p.m. You're invited. And I will do 12 Kalbach songs and speak between each one and give some substance to these songs, because they have to do with Churban. They have to do with the destruction, the feelings of destruction, and the rebuilding, and the shikum, the rehabilitation of Yerushalayim, and so on. All songs that are extremely appropriate for Asara B'Tevet. All right. Having said that, so we're doing mitzvot. Now we're not going to find in the Sefer Mitzvot of the Rambam anything about Asara B'Tevet, because this is obviously a rabbinic add-on. But it's already mentioned at the end of Bayit Rishon by the Navi Zechariah, and it's in the beginning actually of Bayit Sheni. Beginning of Bayit Sheni, they built the Beit HaMikdash, and there was a halachic inquiry mentioned in Tanakh. Ha'efkeh et Tzom HaChamishi. Tzom HaChamishi is Tisha B'Av, the fast of the fifth month. The question was, what's the deal now? Now we have a second Beit HaMikdash. Do we continue fasting or not? Legitimate question. So then you have an answer. The problem is that the answer is not clear. And is it yes or no? It almost sounds like sometimes the people call me up with a shayla and they get a 20-minute shiur on the subject. And I hang up and I say goodbye. My wife in the background says, so what is it? Is it yes or no? Oh, I forgot. I have to call them back. You know, they got a nice shiur on the subject. You have to somehow say yes or no at the end of the day. So should we fast in Bayit Sheni Tisha B'Av or not? As a corollary, all the other fast days. So here's the answer. Tzom HaRavi'i, V'tzom HaChamishi, V'tzom HaShvi'i, V'tzom HaAsiri, the fast of the fourth month, the fifth month, the seventh month, and the tenth month, which are Tammuz, Av, Tishrei, which is Tzom Gedalia, and Tevet, Yiyeh LeBeit Yehuda, L'Sosom HaSimcha, U'LeMoadim Tovim. They will be for Beit Yehuda, Yomim Tovim. Great days. Okay, it's a wonderful answer. When? Today? In 1,000 years? What's the answer? Do we fast or do we not fast? And this became subject to a big machloket amongst the Rishonim as to when the implementation of this great vision of Zechariah Navi. So the Rambam says it's messianic. In Yemot HaMashiach, all of these tzomot, these target dates, are going to be great Yamim Tovim. But in the meantime, the Rambam says that putting the other three fasts aside, Tisha B'Av was fasted during the entire period of Bayit Sheni. Now that is a very remarkable chidush. Here, Beit HaMikdash is standing, it's up and running, it's functioning. Maybe not to the glory of the first Beit HaMikdash, but it's functioning. You can't call it a churban, and they're fasting Tisha B'Av. So the question is, why fast Tisha B'Av if the Beit HaMikdash is running? So Rambam basically lets us know that the gap between what was and what is was so great, between the first and the second, it was still worthwhile fasting Tisha B'Av. It means when you saw the second Beit HaMikdash, you basically still saw Churban. And this is almost demonstrated in the book of Haggai, where there it talks about the beginning of Bayit Sheni, and the young generation, what did they know? They knew exile. And here they see Beit HaMikdash, and they're dancing the Hora. And the old folks, those who may have been 80 years old and over, remembered the first Beit HaMikdash. My gosh, it was only 70 years ago, the Churban. And they may be 85, 86, 87 years old. And they were children at the time. But they remembered it. And they're sitting and they're crying at the opening of the second Beit HaMikdash. And it's not Bechi Shel Simcha, which is a concept. You cry from joy. Sometimes we do this under the chuppah. And sometimes it's not so joy. Whatever. That's one of the thousand reasons why we don't make a Shechiyonua at the wedding. By the way. You never know. But all kidding aside, the Bechi of those elderly people was a Bechi of Tsar, of pain. Because what were they in pain? They were looking at the young generation. They were saying, Chevra, Zelo Zeh, this is not it. This is what to cry about. And the Rambam felt this was a moment that we should remember for over 400 years. Beit HaMikdash is standing. We're still fasting Tisha B'Av. With regard to the other fast, there's all discussion whether it was optional or not. It could have been it was only optional. So it wasn't an obligatory fast. But Tisha B'Av was obligatory throughout the period of Bayit Sheni. Okay. So here we are on Asara B'Teveit. Who said it's Asara B'Teveit? The Novi just calls it Tzom Asiri, the fast of the 10th month. And what's remarkably interesting is that practically all of the fast days, the exact date is problematic. The exact date. I think I have on the... I have one side here, we have the Slichot that we can say this coming Sunday. And the other side is some sources. If you look at the last source on the page, source number 7. So the Gemara Masechet Rosh Hashanah says, Tzom Ha'asiri, Ze Asara B'Tevet, Shebo Samach Melech Pavel al Yerushalayim. It was the time that the Babylonians lay siege around Yerushalayim, which was over 2 years before the destruction. Yerushalayim was already in siege, under siege. Which means it was the beginning of the end. Sheneemar, as it says in Yecheskel Chav Dalet, Vayidvar Hashem Elai, Bashana Hatshi'it, Bechodesh Asiri, in the 10th month, Be'asor Lachodesh, in the 10th day of the 10th month, Asar B'Tevet, Ben Adam, K'tov Lecha Et Shem Hayom, Et Etzem Hayom Azeh. Document this day, write it down for posterity. Samach Melech Bavel El Yerushalayim. Nebuchadnezzar, the Babylonians, lay siege around Yerushalayim. The Gemara says, "Vamai kari le asiri." Why is it called the 10th? Because it's asiri lechodeshim. It's the 10th month. Start counting from Nisan. Tevet is the 10th month. V'alo haya ra'uy lichtov rishon. What happens is, the question is, in that pasuk in Zechariah, it reads, "Tzom ha'revi'i, tzom ha'chamishi, tzom ha'shvi'i, tzom ha'asiri." And if you're talking about the historical events, that's that which happened in Tevet is first on the online. It was 2.5 years before the Churban. Shivaz of Tammuz is the siege, is the crashing of the walls of Yerushalayim. So that's after Asar B'Tevet. Tisha B'Av is after they crashed through the walls. And the assassination of Gedaliah is after the destruction of Beit HaMikdash. So the order should have been Tzom HaAsiri, Tzom HaRevi'i, Tzom HaChamishi, Tzom HaShvi'i. So why... V'halo hayava uila ze lichtov rishon, it should have been first on the list. V'lama nichtav kan, why is it written as it's written? The Tzom Asiri is at the end of the list. Kedei lazdir chodeshim kitikunan, to keep it in the proper order of the months. Nisan is the first month, Adar is the last month, Tevet follows after Tishrei, so that's the order. Tzom Arvi, Tzom Achamishi, Tzom Ashvi, Tzom Asiri. But in fact, that which occurred on Tzom Asiri happened first. That is Rabbi Akiva's understanding. V'ani, and this is Rabbi Shimon speaking, eini omer kein. I don't believe this is the case. Ela, tzoma asiri, you know what tzoma asiri means? It's the fifth of Tevet. It's yesterday's date. Now, we didn't fast yesterday. It's not in the calendar. There's no such thing called the fast of the fifth of Tevet. But Rabbi Shimon says that when Zechariah Navi spoke about Tzoma Revi'i, Tzoma Asiri, he wasn't talking about Asara B'Tevet at all. They're not arguing when did the Babylonians lay siege around Yerushalayim, the 5th or the 10th. They're arguing about what historic event did Chachamim ordain a fast day in the month of Tevet. And Rabbi Akiva said it was the day that the Babylonians lay siege around Yerushalayim way before the Churban. But Rabbi Shimon says it's of a different event entirely. It's a half a year after the Churban. Ze chamisha b'tevet shebosh bat shmua legola shehukta ha'ir. Sorry. What happened? I know this is a hard thing to believe, but once upon a time, there were no cell phones. I know, it's very hard. Rivka, you're going to have to believe me on this one. There were no cell phones. And there was a destruction of Beit HaMikdash, and it took a half a year for the Babylonian Jewish community to catch wind that a half a year ago, in the month of Av, there was a Churban. It took a half a year. And the Gemara here brings the Pasuk, Shenemar Yecheskel Lamed Gimel. So, Vahi Bishtei Esrei Shana, Ba'asiri, in the 10th month, Ba'chamisha L'chodesh, the 5th of the month, L'galuteinu, Ba Eli HaPalit Mirushalayim Lemo Hukta Ir. One guy, one refugee, succeeds in breaking out of the carnage of the Churban and makes it to the diaspora in Bavel and reports that Beit HaMikdash was destroyed on the 5th of Tevet. I'll give you an example. The sunshine. So we know the speed of light and we know the distance of the sun to the earth. So when you take a peek at the sun, you're looking at the sun's rays. You shouldn't really exaggerate that. That's not a healthy thing for your eyes. But for a split second, you take a peek. What you saw was not exactly what just happened that second. What you saw occurred 8.5 minutes ago. Because it takes 8.5 minutes for the light that emanates from the sun to reach planet Earth. That's how far away the sun is. And the sun is the closest star to planet Earth. The next closest star is Alpha Centauri, that on a clear night here in Yerushalayim, without the use, unaided, without any telescope, you can actually see it, if you know what you're looking for. And you're looking at this sparkling star in the sky. And it's bright because it's rather close. How close? It's 4.2 light years away. You know 4.2 light years away? What you just saw up there left the star, the light left the star over 4 years ago. That's what it means. So just think for a second about those stars that we can see that are 20,000 light years away or 100,000 light years away, and obviously the implications for when exactly was the world created. Lubavitcher Rebbe has an interesting take on this. He says, you cannot really trust counting rings around the trees, and a tree has 20,000 rings and it develops a ring every year. No, the tree's 20,000 years old. The Lubavitcher Rebbe said, human beings were created as adults. Adam and Chava were not babies. They didn't mature into adolescence, thank God. And then they didn't become adults. They were created as adults. Kadosh Baruch Hu created trees as adults, with maybe thousands of rings already. And maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and this is a tough one, created the stars with their light already on the way. Now, you got to be a big believer to accept that. But at least he has a suggestion. He's aware. Rav Trevor was a scientist. And is aware of the question here and proposes an answer. That's all. Take it or leave it. But he proposes an answer. So the Churban occurred. And we those in Bavel didn't have an idea. Didn't have a clue what happened until the 5th of Tevet. And the Gemara says that according to Rabbi Shimon, the order of the pasuk in Zechariah is correct. Tzom Ravi, Tzom HaChamishi, Tzom HaShvi, Tzom HaSiri. That was the last order of business. was after Gedaliah was assassinated already, after the Churban, and then came the bad news. And comes to teach you that the receiving of the bad news is as bad as the Churban itself. And by the way, that impacts on private avilut as well. What happens if, God forbid, a person sustains the loss of an immediate relative but wasn't around to catch the news? Hayu dvarim ma'olam, people have gone through this. So there's a concept called Shmua Krova, Shmua Rechoka. Depends on did you hear it before the Shloshim, the other Shloshim, before the year, after the year, and then will determine how much or how little of the Avilut you actually have to go through. So the concept of a Yom Shmua, just hearing the news, has significance.
If you're doing them in the order that it was heard about, all the news items
were delayed. Right. Okay. But there's no report in Tanakh. At least with the Tevet, there's a report that on the 5th of the 10th month, Bahapalit, some fellow made it, and he reported. That we have. That's the only thing we have to go on. Well, if you look at the top of the page now, the page of the sources, source number one, and this comes from Shulchan Aruch. And Shulchan Aruch, Orach Chaim, Siman Taf Kuf Pei, it's the very last unit in the laws of fasting, and it carries a title, Yamim Shemitanim Bo. Here are days that people fast. I can tell you right now, nobody fasts the days that are listed in that section. They are miscellaneous fast days. Many of them gone for a long time ago, and most of them, most people don't have a clue that there ever was such a fast day, whoever fasted them. But nevertheless, it's if you're looking for a good diet, and you want to diet by not eating, just take upon yourself this section of Shulchan Aruch, and for a half a year you're not eating. Because on this day this happened, that day that happened, and so on. So let's take a look. It says, Bishmona b'tevet. That's in 2 days' time. Nichtiva ha-Torah Yevanit b'mei Talmai HaMelech. The Torah was translated to Greek in the days of Talmai, the Egypt, the Greek king, basically Greek cultured king in Egypt. And darkness descended upon the world for 3 days. Now we have to understand, well, what is it? This is the Targum HaShivim, the Septuagint, where the Gemara will tell us, in source number 2, the Tanya, Ma'aseh b'Talmai HaMelech, Shekinesh Shivim u'shnayim zkenim, the Talmai HaMelech invited from Yerushalayim 72 sages, Hechnisam b'Shivim u'shnayim batim, put them in 72 rooms, they all had private service, V'lo gila lehem amakin sam. He didn't tell them why they were brought down to Alexandria. Nichnaz eitzal kol echad v'chad v'mar lehem, kitvu li Torat Moshe Rabchem. All right, I'd like a translation of the Torah of Moshe Rabbeinu into Greek. And here, without intercom, without the ability to consult, all of them come up with identical translation that included certain very interesting changes. So if it was just pure translation and they all got it right, that's not a big chiddush. But if they all made subtle changes without consulting each other, that's nothing less than miraculous. And this happened. And the Gemara gives some examples. Instead of Breshit Bara Elokim, they translated Elokim Bara Breshit, because there might have been a suggestion that there was a deity called Breshit who created God. Breshit Bara Elokim. So they turned it around. Elokim Bara Breshit. God created the beginning. And Breshit becomes a noun. The beginning. Or Naaseh Adam B'Tzalmenu. God says, let's fashion man. And they translated it, Eseh Adam. Now, Kadosh Baruch Hu wasn't working with partners here. And then, of course, the obvious question is, why does it say in the Torah, Naaseh Adam? So there are all kinds of ethical ideas that emanate from that pasuk. But Kadosh Baruch Hu didn't require assistance from any other suggestion, competitive deity of Naaseh Adam B'Tzalmenu. And so on. So they tried to iron out certain contradictions or pseudo-contradictions in the text, and it all came out okay. So they should have made a kiddush in Yerushalayim. Why did they make a fast day? What does it mean, V'ayach choshech ba'olam shlosha yamim? And darkness descended upon the world. You know, there's an upside to studying Torah in the vernacular, and there's also a downside. I remember when I taught at the Midrashit Moriah in the 90s to young ladies who came from Chutz La'aretz for a year or two. So I once met Nechama Leibovitz, Zichrona Levracha, I mean, the greatest teacher of Tanakh of our generation. Hechzira Atara Liyoshna, without a doubt. She told me, you got to teach them all only in Hebrew. And I came prepared to do that anyway, but no, she gave me very, very solid backing. Because I was influenced by my own Rebbe, Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein. When I came to the Gush in 72, I was really ill-prepared to handle modern-day Ivrit. Forget about the Harvard University-style Ivrit of Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein. We couldn't even understand his English. At YU, in Rav Aaron Shir, you brought a Gemara, Rambam, and Webster's Dictionary, not necessarily in that order. His Hebrew was just so highfalutin academic, Israelis had trouble. But all right, it was a good experience for me. I remember we had a get-together with the Anglos, not just Anglos, oh, the Chutznik, with Rav Lichtenstein once, and one guy asked him if maybe he can give something in English. Rav Aaron looked at him and he says, Tishberu lechem et harosh, break your heads on the language. He was right. Because what happens is, everybody's looking for the easy way out. It's hard to learn a new language. And you want to get adjusted to the country and to a new school and all that. And the fierce competition that you have today amongst all the schools. So the word gets back in November, oh, it's so hard here because of the Hebrew. And the other girl writes back, oh, I'm having a blast, all the shulim are in English. And that impacts on registration for the next year. So there's a business consideration, a really strong economic consideration here. But I was not bothered by that. It wasn't my business. I was into chinuch, and I taught in Hebrew. Not all the teachers, but I taught in Ivrit. The problem, as Nechama pointed out correctly, that shivim panim lo Torah, which means all the different ways of understanding a pasuk and chumash, is dependent upon the fact that you have a keen appreciation of the Hebrew language. Once you translate, you've interpreted the pasuk, which means you've limited the understanding. What you've interpreted, what you've translated, is most probably true, but it's only one of many possible understandings of the pasuk. And there's no way from the translated material that you'll ever get to the other ideas. It'll never happen. And therefore, darkness descended upon the world. It's a dark day for Torah, if everybody's going to study in the vernacular. And it's interesting where the Targum HaShevim takes place, the Septuagint, on Egyptian soil, in Alexandria, that produced one of the greatest Jewish philosophers, Philo. The second president of Yeshiva University, Dr. Samuel Belkin, Zichron Levracha, wrote his doctoral dissertation at Brown University on Philo and the oral law. The Brown University, I think, is in Philadelphia. No?
No.
Where is it? Providence. Okay. Say that. The Chiddush was just a few years before, the man didn't know a word of English, Dr. Belkin. He came from Rotten, from the Chofetz Chaim's yeshiva. But he was a genius. And not only did he master English, but he mastered Latin and Greek also. And he was able to read all this material in Greek. And he says that Philo, being a great philosopher, and obviously using sources, he's using midrashic sources that we don't even have. That's why he becomes very, very important. He has early midrashim, nothing in Hebrew. And Dr. Belkin suggests that Philo didn't even know Hebrew. He was the first art scroll Jew. He didn't know him. He didn't know Hebrew. All of his learning is in Greek. Everything's in translation. So today, you have Chumash in English, and Rashi in English, and the Svarna in English, and whatnot, and the Mishnah in English, the Gemara in English, the Zohar in English, the Rambam in English. Everything's in English. Yep.
Was Philo a Jew?
Of course he was a Jew. Of course he was a Jew. I know people who are very devout and religious Jews. Their name is George, right? when Jews live abroad, not always did they adhere to what went on in Mitzrayim, the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, Shaloshinat Shmotam. They didn't change their names. Jews adapted local names. We know that. They adapted local names. What? Right. What happened? No, he didn't make them up. The only first person I ever heard made up a medrash was Rabbi Harry Wahlberg. Remember Rabbi Wahlberg from Borough Park? He taught us how to make a drasha. So he once gave over a whole sample drasha, and he said somebody asked him what the source of the medrash was, and he said he made it up. That's terrific. But there you have to be really good, you know, to say something like that. What happened was there are many medrashim that were not compiled into the official books of medrash, so they got lost. He got lost. And here, Philo has access to Midrashim that came from Eretz Yisrael, in translation now in Greek, that just never made it to the official compilations of Midrash. And that's why Dr. Belkin felt this was very, very important. That was his thesis, Philo and the Oral Law, and Torah Shebaal Peh. So yes, Philo was a Jewish philosopher of a great status, but zero Hebrew. Zero Hebrew. So that's why they made a fast day in Yerushalayim on the 8th of Tevet, because we paid a price. We paid a price. And there are some upsides, no question. Chazal recognized there's some positive sides to the translation, but in the long run, they said there was a reason to fast. But then, if you look further, in source number one, underlined, Ubetetpo on the 9th of Tevet, which is this coming Shabbat, Lo noda ezahi hatzara she'erubo. We don't have a clue what happened. This is an amazing statement. What do you mean we don't have a clue what happened? The Jewish people do not forget anything. Maybe individuals forget where they put the keys in the house, but the nation of Am Yisrael, that we should forget an event and record it in Shulchan Aruch. So first of all, Rabbi Yosef Karo is not the author of this. He lifted it out of context from a very important document from the second Beit HaMikdash era called Megillat Ta'anit. Megillat Ta'anit, not to be confused with the Mishnah, Masechet Ta'anit. Megillat Ta'anit is basically a calendar. And it says on this and this day, such and such happened. No fasting, no eulogies. Lo l'mispat b'hon v'lo l'tanot b'hon. There were many chagim, many yamim tovim in Beit Sheni, and there were also assorted fast days in Beit Sheni. Most of Megillat Ta'anit is days that we're forbidden to fast. So I call it Megillat Anti-Ta'anit. It's the anti-Ta'anit. But there are some fast days mentioned there as well. And one of them is the fast of the 9th of Tammuz, of Tevet. So what does it say in the fast of 9th of Tevet? Lo noda. We don't remember what happened. What do you mean you don't remember what happened? You're a primary source. You're there. You're writing down the history of Beit Sheni. You are in Beit Sheni. The author of the Megillat Ta'anit is in Beit Sheni. How quickly did we forget? What is the 9th of Tevet? It's amazing. So first of all, this line has all the trimmings of internal censorship. Internal censorship means we struck it from the record. No different than the Sidurim that I grew up as a kid. All of a sudden, come to Eretz Yisrael, there's a line before that. In Chutz La'aretz, we were nervous. Maybe in America, less nervous. They started putting it into Sidurim in brackets for insertion purposes. But in Europe, in Christian Europe, this could have brought upon yourself a pogrom. A statement like that. And the Gemara was censored, and the Rambam was censored. So how do we know what was censored? Some people kept logs of what was censored. So there's a sefer called Chesronot HaShas, all the stuff that was censored. And I have it as a book. But more furthermore, Rav Kapach, the great Yemenite Dayan, brought material from his grandfather from, he didn't call it the Al-Tahayim, but from Yemen, that were not subject to censorship because there was no Christianity there. So all of a sudden you discover that all kinds of interesting midrashim in Masechet Sanhedrin about Esav and Yaakov. Okay. Makes for good sermonic material in Parshas Vayetze, Vayishlach, Esav and Yaakov. But it doesn't say Esav, Ayin, Sin, Vav. It says Yud, Shin, Vav, Yeshu. And these were anti-Christian polemics. But in Europe, you're not going to get away with that kind of stuff. So they took the Yud and they made it into an Ayin. So it's not Yeshu, now it's Esav. So we knew there was an oral tradition, very quietly, from, you know, Pelozen, as they say, what the real drush was. But you couldn't print it. Because the church was ransacking shuls when they did a pogrom. They would take manuscripts, bring it back to the Vatican. That's why the Vatican is a very, very important source of medieval manuscripts of Torah, of Gemara, Mishnah, Medrash. And only since 1963, when Pope John the 23rd, in the ecumenical spirit, did he allow Jewish scholars to go and visit the material and the microfilm the material, not to take out, God forbid, but it's accessible today. And we today have many, many Sifrei Kodesh that were, you know, upgraded. And there's a whole section in the 11th chapter of the Rambam's Hilchot Melachim that refers to Christianity and Islam. And it's just not there in the standard prints. But now it's been, you know, reintegrated into the new printings of the Rambam. Because we're here in Israel, we have nothing to fear. You want to talk about the Ram talks about Yeshua HaNotzri? Let him talk. It's not an issue. So, B'tet Bo, on the 9th of Tevet, Lo Noda Ezi Yatzara She'eru Bo, we don't know which Tzara happened, so what you have to read between there's a subtext. We know exactly what happened, but we couldn't write it. So what happened? So once I was at my brother's shul in Teaneck many years ago as a guest speaker. Those are the days when, in I think 2006, 2007, when I was doing my monthly flights to Zurich and having a good time doing it. So my brother introduces me to speak and he says, you know, my brother has the best Rabbonis in the world. He only has to look at his Balabatim once a month. This he tells his people, the Dinik. So I spoke a little bit about this. There's a Dr. David Bernstein. Some people know who he is. He's the son of an illustrious professor at YU, Rav Michal Bernstein, Zechoren Levracha, who had a schut of studying by as well. Aramaic grammar wasn't exactly the most exciting. Dikduk Aramit Pavlit, but he was a towering personality. And I'm talking about his son, who was a very fine Talmud Chacham. Moshe Bernstein. Thank you very much. Moshe Bernstein. So Rabbi Moshe Bernstein pointed out to me that a study was done that they turned the clock back to the year zero. We're now 2017. So 2017 years ago, to the year one of the calendar, of the Christian calendar, and December 25th came out on the 9th of Tevet. Which means the 9th of Tevet was actually a fast day that was to commemorate the tragedies that happened because of Christianity. And that kind of stuff, you're not going to write in Shulchan Aruch. Lo noda eza tzara. We conveniently slipped our minds. We don't remember what happened. Boy, did we remember. Boy, did we know what happened. That was the most painful of all the tzumot. The fast on December 25th. I'm sorry, this is after Shabbat. I thought I shut it off. Okay. Very, very painful. So that was the fast of the 9th. And what's interesting is that if you look at source number 3, it says in the Mogen Avraham, one of the poskim on Shulchan Aruch, it says, Lo noda, ubeslichot shelanu, in our slichot, ita, it's to be found, she met Ezra HaSofer. It's the yard site of Ezra HaSofer. All right, flip the page. And here's the slichot. I'll get to the relevant portion quickly enough. Ezkira mitzok asher kira'ani. I have the translation from Rabbi Rosenfeld here. I remember the stress which befell me. B'shalosh makot b'chodesh hazeh hikani. Three blows he inflicted on me in this month. Three blows. Which three blows? The 8th, the 9th, and the 10th of Tevet. So the 8th is going to be the writing of the translating of the Torah to Greek. The 9th, he's going to talk about the death of Ezra HaSofer. And the 10th is the 10th that we know. But the 10th as the 10th that we know, he's going to split into two. He's going to have the 10th according to Rabbi Akiva, the Tevet according to Rabbi Akiva. And he's going to have the 5th according to Rabbi Shimon. He's going to have a stanza for both, so he's not taking sides. But this is a poem, an elegy, a kina, or a slicha, that will bemoan the fact that in the month of Tevet, we were hit often enough. So with regard to the 10th of Tevet, the 5th of Tevet, we said a few words. With regard to the 8th of Tevet, we said a few words. But the death of Ezra Sofer, I mean, my gosh, everybody died. This was such a monumental tragedy that there had to be a fast day, and let alone Am Yisrael forget about it. If the Magen Avraham knew about it, why didn't the author of the Megillat Ta'anit know about it? Why didn't Rabbi Yosef Karo know about it? Magen Avraham is a 17th century poysek, and Mishnah Berurah, late 19th century, picks up on it. So Chofetz Chaim knew about it. So how come nobody else knew about it? So obviously, the death of Ezra Sofer is symbolic. It's symbolic of something that's worthy of fasting. So let's get to that stanza. That stanza is the third stanza on the page. It begins with Zo'amti b'tish'abo b'klima v'chefer. I was denounced with reproach and shame. Chasach me'alai me'il hod v'tsefer. Chasach means to save, for the chisachon. It was denied from me. The garment, the me'il, like Kohen Gadol has a me'il, of glory. The robe of majesty was stripped off. Tarov tarachbo, hanotein imrei shafer. Without mentioning the name, and he says at the end, who Ezra Sofer? Ezra, the scribe, was forcibly torn away from me. Hanotein imrei shafer is explained as the somehow the one who gives. The Chazal say, Al tikra shefer el a sefer, something about the scribe, Ezra HaSofer, he was ripped, torn from us. Now one second, that's straight out of the book of Bereshit, of Yosef. Tarof taraf Yosef. Did that happen to Ezra? Was he devoured on the open field by an animal? That the poet would use that kind of phrase. You know who the poet is, by the way? Yosef Tov Elem from France, one of the famous Ashkenazi Paitanim of the early 12th century. Very, very famous Paitan. And he's working with a lot of Midrashim here. So what is he saying? Zo'amti b'tish'abo, I was denounced with reproach and shame on the 9th of the month. Denied from me was the cloak or robe of majesty. As Ezra, the speaker of Torah, Imrei Shefer or Imrei Sefer, as Chazal interpret, was ripped out, was devoured, and ripped away from us. What happened? What is he talking about? So turn to the other page, source number 6. Source number 5 first. Source number 5. I see I have on the source number 4, I brought the relevant medrash, the last line on the pasuk, Naftali ayala shlucha, which is in Parshat Vayechi, the last line of source number 4. Naftali ayala shlucha, hanotein imrei shefer, amar rababahu al tikra imrei shefer ele imrei sefer. We'll see what this is all about in a second. Source number 5. Kedetanya, as it says in the Braita, Ad Yavor Am Shacha Hashem, Ad Yavor Am Zukanita. We're familiar with this from Shirat Hayam every day. Ad Yavor Am Cha Hashem Zu Biyah Rishona. It's the first time Am Yisrael comes to Eretz Yisrael. Ad Yavor Am Zukanita Zu Biyah Shnia. This is the second time that Am Yisrael comes to Eretz Yisrael. Mikan Amru Chachamim Ruuyim Ayu Yisrael Leasot Lehem Nes Bimei Ezra Kederek Shinaseh Lehem Nes Bimei Yeshua Ben Nun. It would have been worthy for Am Yisrael to enter Bayit Sheni Eretz Yisrael miraculously, no different than it occurred in the days of Yeshua. But it didn't happen like that. It wasn't a takeover. It was by license from Persian authority, a very, very low level, non-independence type of situation. Better than nothing, but it was not like the days of Yeshua. So why didn't it happen? Ela shegaram hachet. The sin. What sin? What was it? They talked Lashon Hara. They ate on Yom Kippur. I mean, what was the sin? What happened here that in the days of Ezra, it potentially could have been an entry into Eretz Yisrael no greater than the days of Yeshua ben Nun, but it didn't happen. So in source number 6, in the Kuzari, in Ma'amar Bet, you have this onstage Melech Kazar engaging in a conversation with the representative of Am Yisrael, the Chaver, who's the mouthpiece of Rabbi Yehuda Levi. And the Melech Kazar asks him, so if Eretz Yisrael is so important, and they were given the license to go back in Bayit Sheni, where the heck were they? Why didn't they come? And we can figure out statistically that no more than 5% came. 5%? You know what that means? The 95% opted out for America. I mean, they called it Bavel, that had a different name, that's all. But they opted out. As opposed to today, where 46% of Am Yisrael live in Eretz Yisrael. No small matter. 46%. Kadosh Baruch Hu should give all of us good health. In 10 years to 15 years, we're crossing the 50-yard line. And we're going to be more than 50% of Am Yisrael in Eretz Yisrael. Unfortunately, not necessarily or exclusively because of some mass aliyah, halavai, but because of diminishing numbers abroad. Unfortunately. Because of yiluda tivichli lit, negative population growth, and intermarriage and assimilation. I mean, I say this with great pain. Here, there's growth. We know that. So it's a machloket whether it's going to be in 10 years or 15 years. But we're moving rapidly to 50-51%. But then it was 5%. So the Chaver representing Am Yisrael, Rabbi Yehuda Levi speaking, he says, Ovashtani Melech Kuzar, I am thoroughly embarrassed. You're right. You know what? Hatatzodek. I have no words. He says, you're right. Ve'avon hazeh, the sin, asher mina'anu mehashlamat mashi'atu balukim bebayit sheni. And this is what prevented the completion of that which was destined to become Bayit Sheni. Kemo she'amar Zechariah, Roni v'simchi bat Zion, we just read this in Haftara on Shabbos Chanukah. Ki kvar hayach inyan Elokim mezuman lachul, everything was in place. Prophecy could have been restored. Kasher batchila, elu ilu hayu maskimim kulam lashuv b'nefesh chafetza, had everyone, most of the people, desired to come back. Aval shavu miktzatam, but only partially came back. Nisharu rubam, most stayed. Ugdolehem, and their leadership stayed in Bavel. What a finger-pointing accusation at the spiritual Torah leadership. Otzim begalut, they prefer galut. That's the honest truth. They prefer it. It's comfortable. They're set up. Uba'avodah, and in their work. Shelo yipardu mimishkenotehem. They don't want to leave their beautiful homes. They got chandeliers and plush carpeting. You got to live in a three-room apartment. In Yerucham. V'shema al ze amar Shlomo, ani yeshena v'libi er, nishir ashirim. Sleeping away. And this is a stinging accusation here. If you look at the last line. V'ein, two lines before the end. V'ein diburenu hishtachavu lahar kodsho, hishtachavu la'adom raglav, ha'machazir shkinato v'zulat, and other sayings like this. Yeah, with great enthusiasm, with great fervor, with great kavanah, they don't mean one word. Ela kitzifzuf hazarzir, it's the chirping of a bird. In modern Hebrew, we call this mas svatayim, lip service. That's what it's called. She'ein anachnu choshvim al ma she'ne'emar bazeh v'zulato. We don't mean one word of it. Kasher amarta velach kazar. Exactly what you said. You know who really felt this more than anybody else? Ezra HaSofer. He was given the charge to bring Am Yisrael back. Where does it say Hanotein Imrei Shefer? It's a Hanotein Imrei Shefer is in the context of Naphtali in Parshat Vayechi. So Chazal give this whole story in source number 4. I'll just give it to you briefly about Peh. That it was at the Levaya of Yaakov Avinu at the Marat HaMachpelah, and Esav claimed that it's his. I'm going to bury Yaakov in a different cemetery, not here. He deserves the right to be buried in Marat HaMachpelah. And the brothers, they said, no, we bought it. Avraham Avinu bought it. We have a shtar, we have a chuzeh. All right, where is it? We left it in the safe in Cairo. It's in Egypt. Well, there's a Levaya going on now. We can't wait. Hanotein Imrei Shefer. Who was Naphtali? Ayala Shlucha. He was the animal that had the ability to sprint. That's why, by the way, in a very humoristic way, the Israel Postal Service has the Ayala as its symbol. It shows they have a sense of humor. But that's the Ayala Shlucha. They sent Naphtali back to Mitzrayim to bring the Sefer, Imre Shefer, Al Tikra Shefer, El Sefer, the document, and bring it to show them that this is ours, our land. It's here, it's Chatum, it's signed and sealed. Ezra HaSofer brings such a document from the Persians that it is now ours to come home and to rebuild. And he goes to the Babylonian Jewish community, and there are no takers. And he is thoroughly, thoroughly embarrassed. And this is what it means, Zo'amti b'tish'abo, in that third paragraph on the side of the piyut. There was za'am on the 9th of Tevet, baklima v'chefer, it was embarrassing. Chasach me'alai mi'il hod v'chefer, v'tzefer. Had Am Yisrael come back, who knows? Maybe I would have become melech. It's not that he's looking at it because of his personal glory. But what the Paitan is saying is that Ezra could have become melech HaMashiach here. But no. Tarof Toraf. Just like the event of Yosef brought about a continuation, the beginning really, of a long galut, so too the abandonment of Eretz Yisrael in the days of Ezra initiated the downfall of the Beit HaMikdash. It just got started and it was already finished. It didn't have a chance of survival. Tarof Toraf. Why? Because Hanotein Imrei Shefer Hu Ezra Sofer, he was the one who brought the contract that this is now ours, but nobody was interested. Nobody was interested. So what is the fast of the 9th of Tevet? It's the fast of the long galut. The long galut. And unfortunately, this galut was known as Galut Edom, the galut of Rome, which was associated with the Vatican. And things have changed. We'll end this with a little bit more of a positive note. The Rav, in his 1956 monumental speech on Yom HaTzmaut at YU, Yeshiva University, Kol Dodi Dofek. He himself translated into Hebrew. So if you want to get an idea of the level of his Hebrew, just read it. And it's been translated to English as well and other languages. So he hears 6 knockings on the door. The Dod is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Ra'aya in Shir HaShirim is Am Yisrael. And the Dod is knocking on the door. So if you remember Shir HaShirim, all right, she's just turning over, getting up. She has to get oishkeputz, she has to bathe, she has to get dressed, and she has to do her nails. And until she gets to the door, the Dod's not there any longer. And the whole Shir HaShirim is about missed opportunities. Missed opportunities. And the Rav said, here, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's knocking on the door. That's how he heard Medinat Yisrael. And he hears 6 knockings. One of the knock... I know. Mrs. Tech, believe me, one of the questions that I have with on the Rav, and the Rav took the answer to the grave, and we'll never know, how come after that speech, he and everybody in the auditorium didn't run to just pack up and move right then and there? Because that it was a clear call for Aliyah. A clear call. It wasn't like, you know, around and around. It was Yashar, Linyan. Right, that was 1935. Here we're talking about 1956 already. It's a good kasha. The kasha, we know, we have answers, but the kasha is better than the teretz. It's a good kasha. What can I tell you? The Rav is a human being. And he made choices. He made choices. That's all. But I can tell you that b'schut of the Rav, there are about 3,500-4,000 graduates of Yeshiva University sitting right here in Eretz Yisrael today, because the spirit of religious Zionism permeated the yeshiva. Yom HaTzmut was a Yom Tov, the only yeshiva kavod in American soil that observed Yom HaTzmut as a Yom Tov. The only one. They observed a yeshiva kavod. The six knocks. I'm talking about the knocking. One knock was the theological knock. The theological knock, the Rav said, you know, the Catholic Church, they always had a question. If indeed there was a Brit Chadashah, a New Testament, and the covenant between Am Kadosh Baruch Hu and Am Yisrael came to an end with the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash, how come we're still around? It was real kasha. How come we're still around? What are we doing here? We should have gone the ways of the dinosaurs. So why are we still here? So they had three answers. One answer was, the mitzvah is to kill the Jews. That's the first answer. They're here so we can kill them. No, some of the Christians historically fulfilled this mitzvah, the Mahadran. I mean, they felt this was the real thing to do. The second, more moderate camp said, no, you don't have to kill Jews. You have to make sure that they are on a lower social plateau. And this was done in Europe. Separate residential, limiting them to professions, no citizenship, all this kind of stuff. That was the moderate ones. But then the tzaddikim said, no. Liberal-minded, you have to grant citizenship and everything. So one thing left, eternal damnation. The Jews will never return back to their homeland. Why? So why are we here? We're here is because Yeshua was Jewish. And when we're going to teach Christianity, so instead of going to a history book, we have a walking wax museum, Goldberg on the down the block. You know, here's what the Yeshua comes from. You see, keep Shabbat and put on tefillin and so on. That's what Yeshua used to do. So we're, for the last 2,000 years, we're just playing a hatzagah. It's just a show. So the Christians should know what Yeshua's religion was all about. But we don't have to start up with them and anything like that. But never to return to the homeland. Eternal damnation. Galut Nitzrit. And the Rav said, this just blew up in their faces in 1948. 1948? And it's not our problem. That's their problem. And indeed, this is the beginning steps of the Asara B'Tevet converting from a tzom to a chag. It's still not a chag. We're still fasting. We're still observing it as a yom tzom with all the trimmings. But at least we know that which brought about Asara B'Tevet, that which brought about the ninth of Tevet, and even that which brought about the eighth of Tevet, the fact that we miraculously revived the language and were able to learn Torah, teach Torah in Lashon Kodesh as we do today, is indicative of the fact that the Tzom HaAsiri is on its way to becoming a Yom Simcha and Yom Tov for Klal Yisrael. And Emir Hashem, we should all have a schut to arrive at that day, and I don't think it's far away. I don't think it's far away. Okay, I'll say that.
You cough.